This is Sun Sounds of Arizona bringing you the Arizona Daily Star for Tuesday, October 7th, 2025, read for you by David Grant. And taking up a big part of the front page is an aircraft called the Airborne Observation Platform. And the headline is Legacy of Science Reaches New Heights. Scientists take things to a new level at the Santa Rita Experimental Range. This is by Henry Breen of the Arizona Daily Star. The Santa Rita Experimental Range has already been studied for a longer time and across a larger area than just about any other place in North America. But now researchers are taking things to a whole new level. A team from the National Ecological Observation Network, or NEON, recently completed 5 days of flights over the University of Arizona-run Rangeland Research Facility south of Tucson in an aircraft packed with science instruments. Operating out of the Million Air Hangar in Tucson International Airport, the state-of-the-art survey by NEON's Airborne Observation Platform took high-resolution measurements and imagery to document what is growing across the entire 52,000-acre experimental range. The flights are part of a sweeping nationwide effort by NEON to collect and share decades' worth of data that can be used to study changes across the full range of habitat types found in the U.S., from deserts to tropical forests, tiny streams to the Great Lakes. The ambitious project, started in 2011 by the National Science Foundation and operated by nonprofit applied research contractor Battey, includes 81 field sites from Alaska to Puerto Rico. A wide range of information is gathered at each site in a standardized way so that researchers can make meaningful comparisons across the network. It's a long-term 30-year project looking at ecological change over time, said Abraham Karim, NEON's field operations manager in Tucson. The spatial coverage and the temporal change coverage is what sets us apart from other projects. Mitch McLaren, the U of A's director for research at the Santa Rita Experimental Range, framed NEON in loftier terms. They're trying to do ecology on a continental scale. Of course, the 123-year-old Santa Rita Range has a fairly monumental mission of its own. We see time, McLaren said. The first fence, the 80-square-mile outdoor ecology lab, slopes down the western flank of the Santa Ritas from about 5,000 feet to about 2,500 feet, or, as McLaren puts it, from the foothills and skirt to grasslands and desert shrub. If you've ever driven to Madera Canyon, you've crossed through a portion of the range. It's got a lot of elevation change, elevation range, and a lot of precipitation and climate range. Over 30 different soil types, McLaren said. It's very attractive to researchers for that range of settings. The headquarters are housed in a cluster of historic buildings on U.S. Forest Service land in the Florida Canyon, at the southern edge of the range. Hudbay Minerals' proposed Copper World mining project sits just off the northeastern corner of the range. The range was first established in 1902, 10 years before Arizona statehood, as the first rangeland experiment station in the U.S., and probably the world, McLaren said. U of A professor and agricultural researcher Robert Forbes, namesake of the Forbes building just south of Old Maine, is widely credited with the idea. Forbes wanted to find a scientific answer to a series of punishing droughts in the late 19th century that diminished vegetation and decimated livestock herds across the Southwest. So he convinced the federal government to fence off a large swath of open range 35 miles from Tucson, where researchers could figure out just how much grazing the land could sustain. It was the first fence around public domain rangeland, said McLaren, now in his 40th year as a professor of range management with the U of A's School of Natural Resources and the Environment. And for the next 12 years, it was ungrazed. Then the cattle were let back into to gauge the land's carrying capacity and test out different rangeland management techniques everywhere, that is, except on the 15 control plots of desert that were kept sealed off behind enclosure fencing and hasn't seen any grazing since, McLaren said. The history of the range has always included something to do with livestock. But over that 123 years, the research attention has expanded greatly to include to anything related to natural resources and human use. The land was administered by the Forest Service until 1987, when the state took ownership of it as part of the exchange that led to the creation of the Buenos Aires National Wildlife Refuge. Since then, the U of A has managed the Santa Rita Range and is its exhaustive archive of research reports spanning more than a century. Because of the long-term record, we know how and where things have changed, and we have a pretty good idea why, McLaren said. We have land use records. We know where there was fire. We know what amount of grazing was taking place across the Santa Rita since 1916, every pasture. All those old documents used to be kept in one of the buildings in Florida Canyon, he said, but they were moved to the U of A campus for safekeeping after a string of arson fires on the range in 1994. The following year, the university began digitizing the contents of those filing cabinets so the range's historic data could be made available to everyone online. McLaren said it took about 3 years of scanning to get what he called the primary stuff loaded up to the internet. The range now plays host to about 30 and 40 separate research projects each year. Hundreds of peer-reviewed studies have been published using the data collected there. And what's being learned can be directly applied to more than 40 million acres of semi-arid rangeland with similar characteristics in the U.S. and northern Mexico, McLaren said. Grazing also goes on throughout the year on selected parts of the Santa Rita. At the moment, McLaren said, there are about 400 cattle out there divided into two main herds. The livestock is provided by a private cow-calf operation that pays the university the standard state land grazing fee minus a small discount for allowing some experimentation with the animals. For example, the range is presently hosting the largest experiment ever conducted on public land using so-called virtual fencing, basically GPS collars that use sounds and mild electric shocks to move cattle and keep them to their assigned range areas. Now we're in the 21st century, and the technology is not barbed wire, but satellite-based control of the location of the animals. So we're testing that as well, McLaren said. Neon established a terrestrial field site at the Santa Rita Range about a decade ago to represent Desert Southwest in its national network of ecosystem domains. Their setup includes a 26-foot-tall flux tower bristling with sensory equipment and roughly 60 scattered scientific plots where they measure in their standardized way everything from mosquitoes, small animals, and other wildlife to soil composition and seasonal changes in plants. And all that data gets put on their website, McLaren said. During Neon's flights last month, the visiting four-person crew from Colorado scanned the range with an imaging spectrometer, a laser mapping tool called a LIDAR, and a high-resolution camera to record reference photos at a higher resolution than what you'll find on Google Earth. The instruments are mounted inside the De Havilland Canada DHC-6 Twin Otter, a two-prop workhorse of an airplane that flies slow and steady, carries a lot of weight, and can operate almost in any climate. The crew would fly up to 4 hours at a time, crisscrossing the range at about 115 miles an hour and 3,000 feet off the ground in long north-south lines, roughly 90 of them in all, each separated by about a quarter of a mile. You can kind of think of it as like mowing the lawn, said Neon Airborne Sensor Operator Mitch Haynes. We fly north, do a little U-turn, then fly south and keep going back and forth. Pilot Vincent Marshocker weird, joked that when the pattern gets too monotonous for him, he just takes a nap. The aerial observations are ground-truthed, in quotes, by Karam and his team of field ecologists, who also spend a great deal of time on the range collecting their own trove of data. This year, for example, the local neon ground team is assessing root biomass by painstakingly extracting core samples from the soil. We offer this really solid platform for people to ask experimental questions that I think otherwise would be difficult to answer without something the size of this, Karam said. Neon's flying season typically runs from March through September, with the goal of capturing survey sites around the country when their dominant plant species are at their greenest. It's to measure peak productivity for all the vegetation, so, you know, we're looking for full canopies, Karam explained. When Neon was originally conceived, the plan was to fly over the entire network of sites every year, but with just two aircraft and the whole country to traverse, Haynes said they have settled down into a more modest objective of hitting each location at least three times every 5 years. This was the seventh time of aerial data collection over the Santa Rita Range since 2017. This year's stop in Tucson saw the crew battling late summer heat that messed with their scientific instruments and monsoon clouds that diminished their spectrometer readings or grounded the airplane altogether. It ended up taking them 17 days to complete their five flights over the Santa Rita Range and two flights over the Jornada Experimental Range in the Chihuahuan Desert near Las Cruces, New Mexico. Stormy weather kept them from flying the other 10 days that they were here. Even so, they managed to compile more than 5 terabytes of raw data from the Santa Rita alone. All of that information will be processed in the coming months so it can be released for free on the Neon website to anyone who might be interested in it. I think one of the cool things about the airborne data and all the Neon data is that it's not specifically looking at one thing, Haynes said. We're capturing it all, and people can use it for all sorts of different things. Seeing time. The U of A has its own website crammed full of free data from the Santa Rita Range, some of it dating back a century or more. There are maps, drone imagery, plant inventories, and soil readings, as well as ongoing vegetation transects that started in the 1950s and rainfall measurements that started in the 1920s. But the oldest and best-known set of records is the Repeat Photography Collection, which ranks as one of the largest and most accessible of its kind in the world. The effort to document changes in vegetation over time began in 1902, with photographs taken at 16 different locations. Since then, the number of repeat photo stations has grown to 128, most of which are still actively monitored today. The average interval between the pictures is 15 to 20 years, though since 2000, McLaren has seen to it that every active site gets photographed at least once every 6 years or so. The entire series is available on the web, searchable by location, year, or even keywords that might show up in the text for each entry. You can also view all the images at a given site side by side in chronological order, allowing you to follow along as a single mesquite emerges from the middle of a bush in 1935 and grows into a modest tree over the course of 80 years. Probably 6 generations of scientists are represented in that collection, McLaren said, himself included. He started taking repeat photographs on the range in the late 1980s. In 1999, he ended up doing the entire set by himself, all 100-plus sites over the course of the year. Man, I was busy, he said. It was a busy time. Now McLaren recruits at least one other person to join him for the annual photography field trip, usually over spring break in March, before the mesquites leaf out and block the view of what's in the background. They typically shoot about 25 of the sites each year on a rotating basis, but it still takes them about 5 days and a good deal of hiking to catalog even that many locations. It comes with the territory, McLaren said. Studying ecosystem changes at landscape scale requires perseverance and a decades-long attention span. Neon and the Santa Rita Range are proof of that. You can't see the change that's going to happen in the future, but you can see the change that's happened in the past, McLaren said. That's the time we see. It gives us a better appreciation for what's changed and a better understanding of how it might change in the future. And you can contact reporter Henry Breen at hbrean@tucson.com or on X at Refried Breen. Supreme Court rejects Epstein's girlfriend's appeal. This is from Mark Sherman of the Associated Press, Washington. The Supreme Court on Monday rejected an appeal from Ghislaine Maxwell, the imprisoned former girlfriend of Jeffrey Epstein. On the first day of their new term, the justices declined to take up the case that would have drawn renewed attention to the sordid sexual abuse saga after President Donald Trump's administration sought to tamp down criticism over its refusal to publicly release more investigative files from the Epstein's case. Lawyers for Maxwell, a British socialite, argue that she should never have been tried or convicted for her role in luring teenage girls to be sexually abused by Epstein, a New York financier. She is serving a 20-year prison term, though she was moved from a low-security federal prison in Florida to a minimum-security prison camp in Texas after she was interviewed in July by Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche. As is their customs, the justices did not explain why they turned away the appeal. Maxwell's lawyers contended that a non-prosecution agreement reached in 2007 by federal prosecutors in Miami and Epstein's lawyers also protected his potential co-conspirators from federal charges anywhere in the country. Maxwell was prosecuted in Manhattan, and the federal appeals court there ruled that the prosecution was proper. A jury found her guilty of sex trafficking a teenage girl, among other charges. Maxwell's trial featured accounts of the sexual exploitation of girls as young as 14, told by four women who described being abused as teens in the 1990s and early 2000s at Epstein's homes. Neither Maxwell's lawyers nor the Federal Bureau of Prison has explained the reason for her transfer, but one of her lawyers, David Oscar Marcus, has said she is innocent and never should have been tried, much less convicted. Marcus was also the lead lawyer on her Supreme Court case. Maxwell was interviewed by Blanche at a Florida courthouse, and she was given limited immunity, allowing her to speak freely without fear of prosecution for anything she said, except for in the event of a false statement. Epstein was arrested in 2019 on sex trafficking charges and was accused of sexually abusing dozens of teenage girls. A month later, he was found dead in a New York jail cell in what investigators described as a suicide. The first supermoon of the year approaches. This is from Adithi Ramakrishnan, Associated Press, New York. The moon will appear slightly larger and brighter Monday night during what's known as the supermoon. October's supermoon is the first of three this year. It happens when a full moon is closer to the Earth in its orbit. That makes the moon look up to 14% bigger and 30% brighter than the faintest moon of the year, according to NASA. The subtle difference happens a few times a year, sometimes coinciding with other astronomical events such as lunar eclipses. It's really not very unusual, said Derek Pitts, chief astronomer with the Franklin Institute in Philadelphia. Everyone in the world can see a supermoon without special equipment if clear skies permit, but the difference can be tough to discern, especially if people haven't observed the regular moon on nights leading up. If you just go out and look at the moon when it's very high in the sky, there's nothing relative to it to give you an idea of how big it looks, Pitts said. In the latest viewing, the moon will pass within 224,600 miles of the Earth. The closest supermoon of the year is slated for November, followed by another in December. The spectacular spectacles continue in 2026, with two lunar eclipses, a total eclipse across much of North America, Asia, and Australia in March, and a partial one in August across the Americas, Africa, and Europe. And now we're coming on to 20 minutes past the hour. President Trump marks Navy's 250th anniversary. This is from Josh Boak and Ben Finley, the Associated Press, Norfolk, Virginia. President Donald Trump did not let the government shutdown interfere with a stop in Norfolk, Virginia on Sunday to salute the Navy as it celebrates its 250th anniversary. President Trump delivered remarks that, by his own recognition, bordered on making it more of a campaign event, generating applause from the crowd before closing out with a recording of his theme song, YMCA, by the Village People. Among those joining Trump for the festivities were First Lady Melania Trump, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, Navy Secretary John Phelan, Veterans Affairs Secretary Doug Collins, and U.S. Representative Ronnie Jackson, Republican of Texas, a former Navy Rear Admiral who was a White House doctor during Trump's first term. After his arrival in Norfolk, Trump went to the USS George H.W. Bush and spoke to the sailors and handed out challenge coins. The Trumps then watched a military demonstration while standing on the deck of the aircraft carriers. Navy destroyers launched missiles and fired shells into the Atlantic Ocean. Navy SEALs descended from helicopters and fighter jets catapulted off. The administration is seeking to reshape Pentagon culture and use military resources for the president's priority, including quelling domestic unrest and violent crime. Trump has also engaged the military in an armed conflict with drug cartels, leading to 4 strikes on boats in the Caribbean that Washington says were involved in trafficking. And in business, prices for home remodeling outpace inflation. This is from Alex Veiga of the Associated Press, Los Angeles. If it seems like it's getting more expensive to replace a broken door, kitchen fixtures, or upgrade a major appliance, you're not wrong. The cost of home repair and remodeling projects is up compared to a year ago and running ahead of inflation overall, according to a report from data analytics company Verisk. The firm's latest repair and remodeling index jumped 3.4% in the April to June quarter compared to the same period last year. That's a bigger annual increase than the 2.7 rise in inflation in the same period, as measured by the Consumer Price Index. The index, which tracks costs for more than 10,000 home improvement products, including appliances, doors, plumbing, and windows, showed roughly a 0.6% increase from the January-March quarter. While costs did continue to rise, they rose at a slower rate than in the first quarter, said Greg Pine, Vice President of Pricing at Verisk Property Estimating Solutions. Much of the increase in home repair and remodeling costs appears to be driven primarily by higher labor costs for repair and remodeling work, Verisk noticed. The second quarter jump in costs for home improvement products coincided with the Trump administration's broad rollout of tariffs on imported goods from many of the nation's major trading partners. But the tariffs didn't have the expected impact given they were postponed several times and didn't fully take effect until early August, midway through the third quarter. However, homeowners looking to replace cabinetry could soon see prices increased sharply. Following a new volley of tariffs announced by President Donald Trump last week that includes a 50% import tax on kitchen cabinets and bathroom vanities due to kick in on Wednesday. John Lavallo, or Lavallo, 2 L's, an analyst with UBS, estimates that the tariffs on cabinets and vanities could add roughly $280 to the cost of a home. The most labor-intensive types of home repair or remodeling work registered the biggest quarterly increases in labor costs. For example, the cost of replacing tile flooring rose 1.2%, while the cost of remodeling a primary bath or replacing vinyl siding each rose 1% in the April-June period from the previous quarter. Nearly all the 31 categories of repair and remodeling work tracked by Verisk saw costs increase at least slightly. The latest index puts costs for repair and remodeling at almost 62% higher than they were 10 years ago, and more than 73% higher than the first quarter of 2013 when the index debuted. After declining the past 2 years, homeowner spending on maintenance and home improvement projects increased in the first half of this year, according to researchers at Harvard University. And in Tucson and regional news, Central Arizona communities work to rebuild after floods. This is from Ray Covarrubias, Jr. of Arizona Republic. The communities of Globe and Miami in central Arizona asked for the public's help in recovering from the devastating floods that left 3 people dead and dozens without a home, emergency officials said. Even the state's highest office has called for more work to be done. Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs visited some of Globe's hardest-hit areas Saturday and stood strong with local leaders, suggesting more federal assistance for impacted residents. Locals have also wasted no time, setting up fundraising pages and organizing resources for those in need. Globe is about 100 miles north of Tucson. Here's a look at how residents have attempted to get back to normal, plus ways for the public to get involved. Miami High School reopens. After flooding closed the Miami Junior Senior High School, Superintendent Richard Ramos said students and staff were set to return campus Monday, according to a post from the school district on Facebook. The school will return to a normal schedule with the bus route still active and a few alternative routes planned. Student safety remains our top priority, Dr. Ramos said. He asked any students that were impacted by the storm and need support to contact him by email. Residents helping residents. Lynn's School of Dance in downtown Globe had to be entirely gutted after the floods, leaving students without a place to practice. A fundraiser for the studio was established on Zephy, a website similar to GoFundMe. Aureole Flores, a Globe resident and chairperson for the Globe High School Alumni Association, shared images on Facebook of a unique discovery during the cleanup of the dance studio. A mural hidden behind a drywall with mariachi singers, likely hidden for decades. Flores hoped to find a grant to help preserve the mural, she said. Just next door to the dance school, is the famed Mexican restaurant La Casita Cafe. While staff managed to replace a majority of wood siding inside the restaurant, the entire kitchen and dining room still need to be entirely replaced, according to a GoFundMe site. We were one of the hardest hits, Villalobos told Hobbs during her visit. You'll have to come back and have a lunch. Some residents, like Sam Palmer, owner of the previously open storefront Good Junk, faced difficulty when his property's commercial designation meant he couldn't receive county funding, according to a GoFundMe organized to support his recovery. The flood destroyed over 20 years' worth of collectibles, household items, and his only vehicle. Recently, only a day after the flood, he was hospitalized and is doing his best to manage ongoing health issues. Sam faces immense stress from his loss, the GoFundMe said. Without flood nor hazard insurance and living on a fixed income, he needs our support to recover. How you can help. Fundraising information has been shared on Facebook's Globe Miami social network at https://www.facebook.com/groups/158159761023440. It was created by a community. It's important to support fundraisers that were registered as nonprofits and also in good standing with the Internal Revenue Service, said Flores. Sedona will remove flock safety cameras. This is from Ren Smetana of the Arizona Republic. Sedona's City Council unanimously voted to sever its contract with Flock Safety and remove 11 automated license plate recognition cameras intended to aid police investigations from around the city. The public has told us overwhelmingly that they don't want them, and I have offered to speak with some people and say, is there some middle ground approach that would satisfy you? Fewer cameras, less data retention? But the overwhelming response has been no, Council Member Derek Pfaff said. Time is money, as they say. I really don't want to throw good money after bad, so I think we should just shut this thing down, take down the cameras, Pfaff said, added as the council voted in September. In March 2025, Sedona entered into a two-year contract with Flock Group Incorporated for automated license plate recognition services to the city, joining in a cooperative purchasing agreement with Tempe. In August 13th city council meeting, it was decided that more information regarding data storage, retention, and usage would need to be provided before the license plate recognition technology could be used. Along with concerns about Flock Security's data policies and use of artificial intelligence, some community members were upset by the lack of public awareness. Local angle. Several community organizations in Tucson have been asking the University of Arizona to end its contract with Flock Safety, citing reports that law enforcement officials across the country have used the data collected from the license plate reading cameras for immigration-related searches, among other issues. One of the groups, DeFlock Tucson, is circulating a petition asking the U of A to end its contract with Flock Safety, saying, "This mass surveillance is a gross violation of your Fourth Amendment rights, collects personal data in a violation of privacy, and is a gift of your data to the growing surveillance state." U of A Police Chief Chris Olson counters that the camera system helps maintain a safe and secure campus environment and operates within privacy laws. The data is deleted after 30 days and third-party access is prohibited without prior approval from the UAPD or a court order. U of A uses the information to investigate misdemeanor and felony offenses. The Tucson Police Department and Pima County Sheriff's Department are all also listed as having Flock Safety contracts. A few said the license plate readers would not be an issue for them if the public had been notified about the project in advance, but the lack of transparency and encroachment in residential communities had made them uncomfortable. Others said they believe the license plate readers were a good idea and should have been installed a long time ago. Sedona receives over 3 million visitors annually, according to police. Supporters of the readers say they would be a valuable asset in investigations, given the large number of people entering and exiting the city. One resident, Sandy Boyce, organized LiveFreeze.com, LiveFreeAZ.com, as a way to connect with other Sedona residents and spread information about decisions being made regarding license plate readers in Sedona. One day they're not there, and then the next day there are all these poles with these creepy looking cameras all over, Boyce said. And I mean, Sedona only has 10,000 people, and the median age is 59. You know, it's not like we have marauding gangs of senior citizens. Boyce believed people all over Arizona should call in questions their city's use of Flock Safety license plate readers, and highlighted opposition from across the political spectrum. "We don't have to just look at them and be annoyed. We can actually do something," Boyce said. What is Flock Safety? Flock Safety, founded in 2017, specializes in automated license plate recognition, video surveillance, and gunfire locator systems. The company operates these systems under contract with local law enforcement agencies, neighborhood associations, and private property owners. Flock Safety works with over 6,000 law enforcement agencies in 49 states across the United States, according to his website. Flock Safety's license plate readers are attached to poles near neighborhoods, schools, and shopping centers, taking photos of every car that passes. The system logs license plate information, vehicle characteristics, and timestamps. The police can log into a dashboard and search by plate number, make, model, and even bumper stickers. How the shutdown affects immigration enforcement services. This is from David Ulloa, Jr. of the Arizona Republic. The majority of U.S. Custom and Border Protection, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and most of Citizenship and Immigration Services employees are staying on the job despite the ongoing government shutdown. With the passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, CBP and ICE, both of which fall under the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, likely will have more cushion to stay fully operational during the government shutdown, according to an analysis by Aaron Ricklin Melnick for the American Immigration Council. USCIS, which handles immigration benefits, also will likely continue to operate as normal because the agency is funded by fees. However, E-Verify, the electronic system used by employers to determine whether a prospective employee is legally eligible to work in the U.S., will likely be disrupted because the system is funded by Congress. The One Big Beautiful Bill Act that President Donald Trump signed into law on July 4th allocated about $29.9 billion to U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which includes money to recruit, hire, and train additional ICE personnel, and the expansion of the 287G program, which allows local law enforcement to participate with ICE in federal immigration enforcement. The One Big Beautiful Bill also allocated $4.1 billion to hiring and training additional CBP personnel, which includes Office of Field Operations officers who work at ports of entry and Border Patrol agents who work between the ports. Because of that funding, there may be key differences this year on how the government shutdown affects immigration agencies, Ricklin Melnick said in his analysis. Will ICE still carry out deportation? ICE will retain 19,626, or about 96% of its 21,068 total onboard employees during the government shutdown, according to Homeland Security contingency plans. ICE will continue to carry out deportations, an ICE spokesperson said in an email to the Arizona Republic. We will continue to hire, train, and deploy law enforcement across the country to make America safe again, and continue with the removal of the worst of the worst, undocumented criminals, including rapists, pedophiles, murderers, gang members, and terrorists, the ICE email said. Is Border Patrol active during the government shutdown? Rest assured that CBP continues to report for duty and protect America 24/7, 365, regardless of the failures of the legislative branch, CBP Commissioner Rodney Scott said in a post on X. CBP will retain 92% of its employees during the government shutdown. But the reality is the political gridlock in Congress forces thousands of CBP employees to risk their lives without pay, even as assaults against our officers have skyrocketed, Scott said. How will the shutdown affect citizenship and immigration services? USCIS will not cease its critical functions. Spokesperson Matthew Tregresser said, USCIS largely is insulated from shutdowns and will mostly operate as normal because it is entirely funded by fees paid by immigrants, U.S. citizens, and employers paying for the applications, Ricklin Melnick said in his analysis. Will the government shutdown affect immigration courts? Immigration courts, which fall under the U.S. Department of Justice Executive Office for Immigration Review, are funded almost entirely by Congress and will likely pause most non-essential functions during the shutdown, Ricklin Melnick said. If the shutdown drags on, it could lead to tens of thousands of cases being rescheduled, Ricklin Melnick said. In previous shutdowns, non-detained immigration court hearings were suspended because they were deemed non-essential. It is also possible the Trump administration will deem the non-detained immigration courts essential as well, given their mass deportation push. Detained immigration court hearings continued as normal in previous shutdowns and will likely continue as normal during the recent shutdown, Ricklin Melnick said. with the Trump administration detaining a record number of immigrants, illegal immigrants, rather, this suggests that they may be using the opportunity to divert as many judges as they can to hearing detained cases, Reichland Melnick said. And at about 20 minutes before the hour, let's go to Lifestyles with Hints from Eloise. Background music overpowers dialogue. Dear Eloise, my pet peeve is TV shows where the background music is so loud you cannot hear the dialogue being spoken. I am not deaf, and it's very irritating to lose what's going on in the show. This is from Lissa B., Sugar Hill, New Hampshire. Lissa, I love music, but like you, I don't like it when it drowns out all the dialogue. I can understand how you feel. Maybe you should write to the producer of the program and tell them how you feel. I'm sure many others feel the same way, Eloise. And just an addendum, most TVs have a audio setting just for dialogue to tamp down the sound effects and music so you can hear the dialogue much better. Dispenser pump. Dear Eloise, with regard to the question about a new bottle or jar dispenser not working, I always keep my own old bottle until I know whether the new one works. If not, I use the old pump on the new bottle or jar. This is from Shirley in Hamilton, Ohio. When draining hot water, dear Eloise, pouring boiling water down a sink can be dangerous due to possible splashes when it meets the cold sink and drain piping under the sink. Also, the hot boiling water might cause a thin plastic drain piping connections under the sink to soften, pull apart, and leak. To prevent this, I pour my hot spaghetti water down the sink drain, and I run the cold water at the same time. This is from Jim G. in Merrillville, Indiana. Phone number in wallet. Eloise. Dear Eloise, my hint for your readers is to make sure that somewhere in your wallet you have a phone number where you can be reached. Some time ago, I came across a wallet with money and credit cards in it. I looked for a phone number to alert the owner, but there was nothing. No phone number on her driver's license or anything else. I was finally able to track her down by calling her car insurance agent off her card and having him give her a call to get a hold of me. Had I been a less diligent person, I could have easily given up, kept the cash, and tossed the rest. She was so grateful that I went out and made the effort to do so. This is from Kay Millicaff in via email. Grocery lists. Dear Eloise, I've seen several suggestions for ways to keep grocery lists, including taking a photo of a paper list with a phone. I like to suggest a more efficient way of using a phone for a grocery list. I use my phone's Notes app to create a bullet list for groceries. As I shop, I can mark off each of the bullets to indicate that I picked up an item. I can also add people as collaborators for the list so that they can add items. And if they're shopping with me, they can mark off the items they've picked up as well. This really comes in handy when several of us go to the store at the beginning of a beach vacation. Sandy F. in Virginia. Ink accident. Dear Eloise, I like to write with a fountain pen, but the last time I wrote with a fountain pen, I spilled the ink on my sleeve. Now I need to get it out of the cotton blouse. How do I remove this stain? This is from Melody A. in Provo, Utah. Melody, a fresh ink stain can usually be blotted out several ways, then soaked in milk for 30 to 40 minutes. Afterwards, wash as usual. Eloise, you can send a money-saving tip or time-saving hint to Eloise at Eloise.com. That's Eloise with an H. And now we go to Royal Stars with Georgia Nichols. Happy birthday for Tuesday, October 7th, 2025. You are alluring, engaging, and assertive. You're also strongly opinionated and vigorous about whatever matters to you. This year, you'll reap the benefits of your hard work. You will attain power and leadership. Aries, March 21st through April 19th. Use skillful means today to deal with power struggles about shared property, taxes, inheritances, debt, or jointly held items. Tonight, patience. Taurus, April 20th through May 20th. This is the classic day for squabbles with parents, bosses, and authority figures, probably about power and control. One party might try to manipulate the other. Tonight, seek solitude. Gemini, May 21st through June 20th. When it comes to your job, your pet, or your health, you might feel out of control. This is why you might act compulsively, because you think you must do something. Tonight, talk to a friend. Cancer, June 21st through July 22nd. Don't get hung up on power struggles with romantic partners today. Likewise, parents must be careful not to get sucked into power struggles with their kids. Tonight, listen to others. Leo, July 23rd through August 22nd. Discussions with family members might be tense or pushy today. Home repairs and chaos at home might lead you to believe that something has to be done in a certain way. Lighten up. Don't make a big deal about anything. Tonight, learn. Virgo, August 23rd through September 22nd. Today, you have strong opinions, which is why you may feel compelled to do something in a certain way or stick to a particular idea. Tonight, guard against possessiveness. Libra, September 23rd through October 22nd. Although you're an excellent debater, you don't like conflict. You want harmony in your environment, at least matching towels. Tonight, be objective. Scorpio, October 23rd through November 21st. Today, Mercury is in your sign and at odds with your ruler, Pluto. Keep an open mind and resist becoming obsessed with one idea. Don't force your point of view on others. Tonight, get organized. Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st. Your ability to research something or to look for hidden information is excellent today because your mind is focused, almost driven. If you need the truth about something, you will leave no stone unturned. Tonight, play. Capricorn, December 22nd through January 19th. You look great to others because the sun is casting you in a flattering spotlight. Travel appeals to you, but today you might find yourself at odds with a friend or a member of a group, especially someone younger. Tonight, relax. Aquarius, January 20th through February 18th. There will be little benefit in arguing with parents, bosses, or authority figures today, including the police, which is why it might be wise to avoid doing so. Tonight, discussions. And Pisces, February 19th through March 20th. This is the classic day to get on your soapbox with your opinions about religion, politics, and different countries, different cultures, you name it. Tonight, check your money. And now, moving on to sports. High school student athlete of the week, going the extra mile. Cross-country standout's dedication stretches beyond running. This is from Elvia Verdugo of the Arizona Daily Star. Before the town woke up and the sun set in, Marana High School senior Andrew Toy laced up his shoes and spent his summer mornings running with his teammates. As the group of teens made their way through farm fields in Marana to the town's regional airport, they're often greeted by community members who offered a quick hello or even some water. They're super nice, and it just feels like a big community, Toy said. They don't care that we're shirtless, we're sweaty, and we look like we're dying and have snot on our faces. They don't care at all. They're always with open arms. Those summer training sessions are some of his favorite runs, mostly because of the interactions with the Marana community. But Toy wasn't always toying around with the idea of being a runner, despite being a multi-sport athlete. He grew up playing baseball and basketball and only taking to running somewhat seriously during his sophomore year. At first, it was more fun and socialization. However, by the time his junior year rolled around, he was all about the sport. It was like, I'm not going to put too much pressure on myself to do this. But then I ended up really liking it. And now I put a lot of pressure on myself, Toy said, adding, we have a new coaching staff and a lot of my friends. We started maturing together. I think it helped a lot. It built a lot of progress, and I started really improving at the sport. I started taking it more seriously with new training plans and whatnot. and I started to excel. Then, after doing track last year for the first time, we had a really good season. I was like, I think running is what I want to do. It's definitely my passion. That passion has led him to have one last memorable season as a Tiger. Last week, Toy set a personal record of 16 minutes, 42 seconds, 0.7 in the 5,000 meters at a meet with Canyon del Oro and Mountain View Marana, where he finished in second place. His new personal record earned him the second spot on Marana's boys' cross-country season bests in the 5,000. Since fully committing to running, the raw competition has become Toy's favorite part of the sport. In other sports, there's a lot more external factors that are going in to influence how you play. Like the pitcher for baseball, he could be throwing 95 miles an hour, but so your at-bats are going to be a lot harder. In basketball, you might be going against a really good recruit, but in running, it's always you against your competitors, and you're going to run either way. You're going to put one foot in front of the other, and it's up to you how much you're actually going to want to put out on the course. And there's not a lot of factors that are going to entertain, because everyone's running on the same course in the same conditions. I love the idea of just being able to have that competition at a base level without too many other factors. Toy and the rest of the Tigers have a couple of more opportunities to indulge competition before they wrap up their regular season with two invitationals. Ahead of the regular season coming to an end, along with his high school running across country career, Toy says he's feeling good in the moment. I never thought I'd be running my first year of high school, he said. I've always liked baseball, and I've always liked basketball more. So I never really viewed myself as a runner. But I'm running with people I enjoy, and I enjoy the coaching staff. We're like a brotherhood on the team, which makes it a lot better. Representing a community. Marana Boys cross country coach, head coach Joe Schaff, is only in his second year of coaching the team, but right from the beginning, he saw Toy make an impact on the program. He's the first athlete to buy in to Schaff's coaching system and philosophy for the program. Schaff says he really didn't ask too many questions negatively, and a lot of positive questions on his part. Especially because I know he wanted to improve, and it seemed like he wanted to just be a better person because of running, Schaff said. When I first took over, he'd be one of the first people there. He would help lead drills, help lead stretching, and make sure the guys were doing their runs correctly. So immediately, he stepped in as a leader for me and brought in people. It's made a world of difference for a lot of the young guys because he's sort of evidence of what we're doing, how it works, and it's good to have a cornerstone like that in any program. During school, Schaff has seen Toy picking up trash around the campus and even beyond school at local cross-country meets and guiding new students in their classes. He captures our Tiger pride perfectly, Schaff said. We read our team goals every day, and one of the things in there is Tiger pride. A few times and often we go to places where we're traveling as a team and doing things together. He's one of the people who sort of keeps us grounded. And we're doing this not just for ourselves. Every time we put on a Marana jersey, we are representing a community. We are representing a whole group of people beyond ourselves. In school, he's part of Marana's Philosophy Club, National Honor Society, and a member of the school's Student Athlete Leadership Team, all on top of holding a 4.5 GPA. When he's not giving all his energy to school and athletics, he loves to spend time outside, whether it's going fly fishing, something he picked up from his grandfather, or playing golf with his most recent hobby, frisbee golf. Once he graduates this coming year, his goal is to go to pharmacy school at the University of Arizona. Pharmaceutical sciences will allow him to utilize his passion for chemistry as well as interacting with community members. While he plans to shift his focus from running to settling down in college upon high school graduation, there's still a chance you could find him on those warm summer morning runs going through Marana, the town and community that brings him so much joy. Arizona football. Brennan gets in touch with inner model Justin Spears of the Arizona Daily Star. Everything was business as usual in the Arizona Wildcats team meeting until they received a pleasant surprise. In the days leading up to Arizona's 43-13 win over Oklahoma State, the players were surprised with new uniforms, the off-white sandstorm look the Wildcats wore on Saturday. Arizona's new alternative uniforms were inspired by the Los Angeles Rams' bone-colored uniforms and the collar, jersey numbers, and patches on the Wildcats' alternates are red. Arizona wore candy red helmets with retro cactus sunset decals. "They're fire," said one Arizona wide receiver, Trey Spivey, who had 3 catches for 80 yards and 2 touchdowns against Oklahoma State. "It's funny because I was talking to a couple teammates literally a few weeks ago and it was like, bruh, if we had some white uniforms with red numbers, that would be so fire." The uniforms were unveiled to the players during a team meeting. A 6'4 lanky model wearing a number 81 jersey walked into the meeting room at Lowell Stevens Football Facility. Arizona's number 81 walk-on wide receiver, Scotty Brennan, the son of the Arizona head coach, Brent Brennan, except it was the older Brennan in uniform, shoulder pads, helmets, cleats, gloves, and all. "We were in a meeting and he surprised us," said linebacker Max Harris. Spivey said, "It's funny how Coach Brennan introduced them. He came in fully suited and he looked like his son Scotty. We all thought it was Scotty. It was hilarious." Brennan said that he and Scotty Brennan are similarly built, but Scotty is better looking. "When I took the helmet off, the players were shocked because they thought it was him," Brennan said. "It was a fun moment and I was really excited about those uniforms. The funny part is that they weren't sure who it was because there was a visor and they couldn't see my face." These young men are playing college football here at the U of A, everywhere in college football. "They care so much and they put so much in," Brennan said. "Sometimes it can be a pressured life they live at this level. Football has to be fun. How do we find ways to make it fun? Well, one of the easiest ways was to make fun of the head coach, who is looking like a jerk in a college football uniform." You can contact Justin Spears, the Star's Arizona football beat reporter, at jspears@tucson.com or on X at Justin E. Sports. And this has been the Arizona Daily Star for October 7th, 2025, brought to you through Sun Sounds of Arizona and read by David Grant.